Good morning, Santa Fe. Good morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We're also podcasting. The website is santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can listen to the show anytime you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services, and you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. Later on in the program, we will be speaking with John Kennedy from Santa Fe New Music about some musical performances that are coming up, and we're also going to be speaking to Juan Cidi and Rebecca Carmona, who are doing a fabulous flamenco night. Right now, by telephone, I would like to welcome Tom Jenks and Carol Edgarian. They are the editors of Narrative Magazine, an online literary journal that's found at narrativemagazine.com. Welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning to both of you. Narrative Magazine is a very interesting concept. It's an online literary journal. And on your site, you mentioned that the United States has lost 20 million readers, although I'm not sure over what time. What happened? What is this loss of readers of literature all about?
Well, the NEA did a survey. In fact, they've done a couple of surveys over the last few years just to gauge literary reading. And they found that especially in the age group between 18 and 40, there was a real decline, and I think most of that's attributable to new media. There's a lot more competition for everyone's time. You know, we all are busy on the internet and elsewhere, looking at other things than books and magazines. And publishers have responded to this in terms of product, I guess I should say, by publishing less literature in favor of more immediately commercial, saleable stuff. So what we're trying to do is use the internet to encourage people not only to look at YouTube or to download iTunes, but also to keep reading good literary work. So we're publishing a lot of the same people who you'd find in The New Yorker, but we're giving it away for free.
Tell us about the competition for time is one thing, but I mean, are students being taught to read literature in the first place in school the way they were perhaps when I was a kid in the 60s and 70s?
Well, it's interesting. I was at a back-to-school night at our young children's school, elementary school, and the new head of the school was saying that, you know, if he were to say what was the most important thing for children to begin learning now, it's chemistry and Chinese.
And
I think there has been some de-emphasis on the kind of 3R approach to school that maybe you and I learned, more science, more technology, more media approach to learning than just reading on the page, although certainly reading is still strong in schools. I don't want to say that it's not, but I think, among the general public, reading is definitely declining.
Among younger readers, you talked about the 18 to 40 age group, or mm-hmm. younger, How do I say this? For older readers, there is this sort of either nostalgia or just aesthetic pleasure in holding a book in your hand and turning the pages. Is that just gone, or what's...
I would say that certainly there's a demographic split of people who are used to reading or getting their information directly off the screen versus those who still want to hold the pages in their hands, and we give that option. You can certainly print out the magazine or read it online, so you don't have to choose. And one thing I would add to what Tom was saying is there, while studies have shown that readership is declining, storytelling is more alive than ever.
What do you mean by that?
Well, folks desire to hear a good story. I mean, we do it every day in our lives. We sit down at the breakfast table or the dinner table, and you tell the story of your day. People want to read, whether it's reality shows or whatever form they're getting in, they want to hear stories that give meaning to their lives. And what we're trying to do in the magazine is to show that good stories are timeless, and to give them free of charge to anybody in the world. You can access Narrative if you have a computer. There's no subscription charge. So we have readers in Africa and Iceland and Indonesia, as well as in this country. And if they can get to a computer, they can get to really good stories. And I think that hunger has not diminished at all. I think it's more alive than ever.
And it certainly is played out in film and television, but not always at a very high level of quality.
Right, right. And that's also true in terms of stories on the web. And what we're trying to do is really put top shelf stories, poetry, nonfiction, and have everyone be able to get to them.
We're talking to Carol Edgarian and Tom Jenks, the editors of Narrative Magazine, who, by the way, are going to be in Santa Fe on Saturday, October 13th, doing a cocktail party and dinner and reading featuring authors Ann Beatty, Robert Olin Butler, Dan Gerber, and Santa Fe's own Arthur Z at the El Dorado Hotel. That's this Saturday. We'll be giving more information out about that in just a little while. Literary circles have always been about not only solitary writing and sending out your stories and reading in magazines, but also group activities like literary salons and the friendships and contacts that develop from those human connections. Do those things need to be face-to-face, or is the internet acting as a kind of substitute?
Oh, what a good question. We're somewhat anomalous in that we don't have an office. It's an enterprise that's entirely virtual. Our art director is in Florida. We have staff and editors all over the country who are linked through the internet. Most of the work we do is by email and telephone. On the other hand, we have very strong community ties in Seattle and in New York and now in Santa Fe. And it is good to bring people together. It is good to have people in the same room. And to do it that way, but it doesn't have to be exclusively that way. There is a community that exists simply on the friendship and belief around good writing and stories. And one of the things about the internet that's often noted is that it, in its social networking, it can be isolating. And many of the people who we're working with on this magazine are people who we have known and been friends with for over 20 years. And we're not all located in the same place, but we can share this interest, this passion, this love through working together on this.
Where do you get the writers? How do you gather the writers together for your magazine? Do you select among all these people whom you know, or do people submit, or a little bit of both?
Both. Over a quarter of a century, we've developed a lot of friendships with writers, and if you look at the magazine, you'll see that there are a lot of extremely well-known writers in the magazine. We're constantly looking for new writers and emerging writers, and we do a lot of work in terms of reading submissions and working with writers on their material in order to bring them up into the magazine, publish them, and to advance them. We give a prize. We give a number of prizes, and many of our prize winners have gone on and received book contracts and awards, and we're very proud of that work.
And part of our mission is to just make as transparent as possible that divide between readers and writers, to be able to have a worldwide audience is very exciting, and to not have all those boundaries of countries and distance, and for readers to have that immediacy with writers. Not only can you read what writers are up to, and we have interviews, and we also have a backstage section which gives, shows manuscripts in progress, and you can hear poets reading their work aloud, and also writers as they develop their manuscripts. So it's all how many different ways can you show the world of the writer and bring it to the reader? That's really what we're trying to work on.
And also not have to cut down trees and ship these things across the planet.
Well, and the great thing about the web is you don't have those long lag times. I mean, there's an immediacy. We have a correspondent, Ned Parker, who's in Baghdad, and he's been filing reports and will continue to do so. And it's not on newspaper timeline, but it's not also on the lag time that with books that you have six months, a year, 18 months kind of thing.
It's very interesting, and I have to say the pace of life, which for probably many of our listeners is not as slow as we'd like it to be at times, there is something about this particular journal that when you sit down and read it, I don't know, you start breathing more slowly and can get lost in it. And I find that pretty unusual for an internet experience.
Well, as our technological friends call us, we're text dudes. So one of the things we're trying to do with the magazine is seduce people into a sustained commitment with the word and reading longer pieces. We publish shorter things too, and we'll continue to encourage narrative suspense, longer reading, by enticing people with some shorter material too. But one of the neat things, I mean, most magazines, periodicals today, can't publish longer work, and we can publish things at any length, you know, without regard to how many pages we need to have in an issue in relation to ad ratio, for instance. Most periodicals, the New Yorker, for instance, need to have about 50% ads to content, which means it's hard to get anything very long in there. So, you know, we can publish full-length works at novel length.
Have you published novels in it?
We have. We've published several novels, and we continue to look for other novels to.
Now, do you publish them all at the same time, or is it one of those?
We serialize them.
Do you really?
And what's really fun about that is it harkens back to the days of Twain and Dickens.
Totally.
They often serialize their novels, and so while we're working with a new age medium, we're really trying to bring back some of the old ways of storytelling and sharing stories.
And so here is your audience chomping at the bit for the next little chapter.
Exactly.
That's great. We're talking to the folks from Narrative Magazine. How do you support this work? I mean, obviously, it doesn't take the capital commitment of printing that printing and mailing would require, but still.
From the kindness of readers, and that's what this event on Saturday night is all about. The Narrative is a nonprofit, and most of our staff is volunteer based, but we do believe in paying our writers and paying to support the folks who are doing the technical side of things. And so, we have events like this Saturday's event where folks can come and hear amazing storytelling and get a delicious dinner, and we hope feel good about giving the magazine some money and helping support it.
People can find out more information about the event on Saturday night by writing to party@narrativemagazine.com or giving a phone call to area code 530-895-3381 or just simply go to narrativemagazine.com.
Also now, at the Lenzic Theater, there's information at the box office there.
Oh, okay, then that's easy, 988-1234. And it's cocktails, dinner, and reading featuring Ann Beatty, Robert Olin Butler, Dan Gerber, and Arthur Z. And in fact, Robert Olin Butler is going to be on this show by phone on Thursday morning, so we'll be talking more about that.
Terrific.
Oh, thank you, Mary Charlotte. That was wonderful.
Well, we want to thank you both for being here on the telephone, on the air, and we will see you on Saturday at the El Dorado Hotel. Tom Jenks and Carol Edgarian, the editors of Narrative Magazine, an online literary journal that can be found at narrativemagazine.com. We're going to take a little break right now, and when we come back, we'll be speaking with John Kennedy about the work of Ingram Marshall. Stay tuned to KSFR. I'd like now to welcome John Kennedy. He is the artistic director of Santa Fe New Music and is here to talk about an upcoming concert. Welcome, John.
Good morning. Great to be here.
It's great to have you here. And you used to do a new music show on KSFR, introducing Santa Feans to the wonders of this form. How would you describe, quote-unquote, new music?
Well, new music can really be incredibly stylistically diverse. It can't be pigeonholed anymore. There are more composers writing music today than there ever have been. And new music is incredibly exciting. We're talking about, shall we say, the post-classical tradition. But what a lot of people came to associate with contemporary music in the late 20th century, that it was atonal and academic and inaccessible and not fun to listen to, those days are really over. They've been over for about 20 years now. And new music is just this vital world of music as a living art form. And to anyone who loves musical traditions of any kind, there are all kinds of entry points into the kinds of work that composers are doing today.
So the what happened to all that atonal and hard to access stuff?
Well, you can probably still hear it if you go to an Ivy League composition department here and there, but not all of them.
So you have to get out of the West, huh?
Yeah, well, you know, there's to be fair, you know, many of those schools have produced, you know, younger generations in the last, you know, 20 years of people who are writing all kinds of work. But, you know, there still is that bastion of academic music that exists in that world.
So you have a concert coming up this Wednesday featuring the work of Ingram Marshall. Who's Ingram Marshall? And he was supposed to be on the show today but had airplane delays, so.
Yeah, he got in very late last night, so we wanted to spare him that. But Ingram Marshall's a composer from Connecticut. He actually...
Is he at one of those bastions of Ivy League?
He's at Yale some of the time, I believe. But Ingram is a West Coast composer by aesthetic or association sometimes because he started out there and was sort of associated with John Adams when John Adams came to public renown. But Ingram's work is wonderful. He is the first... commissioned composer of Santa Fe New Music's Commission Club. This is a sort of a community commission club in which people can contribute to the creation of a new work of music, and it's affordable for people to participate in. And we had a number of 50 people who participated within the last 2 years in pooling resources to commission this new piece. And it's something that we're going to be continuing now on an annual basis in commissioning great composers of our time and adding new works to the repertoire that start right here in Santa Fe. And Ingram's just a tremendous composer of work with great, shall I say, environmental awareness and cultural sensitivity. His music has appeal to many different kinds of people, and so he was sort of a logical first choice for us because he's a composer with extremely wide appeal.
So there will be a concert this Wednesday, the 10th of October at 7 o'clock at Stearin Hall at the College of Santa Fe campus?
No, that's at Santa Fe Opera.
Oh, at the Santa Fe Opera.
Yeah, Stearin Hall is their big, you know, shall we say, rehearsal hall.
Right, I can read.
Yeah.
yeah. Right up at the opera.
Exactly.
Ingram Marshall's music is said to be gamelan-inspired. What is the nature of that inspiration? I mean, does he use gamelan instruments, or is it more the sense of time or the structure of the music?
I think it's time and structure. I mean, certainly some of his early works may have used the gamelan and certainly recordings of them in sampling them. What Ingram does a fair amount of, and he's known for, is recording sounds in the environment or around the world and incorporating them into a musical work through tape or, you know, now in this day and age, a digital recording. And that interfaces with live musicians. And the work we've commissioned from Ingram, Sea Tropes, uses a recording of the ocean and crashing waves, and that serves as the bed or the layer upon which a quintet of musicians plays more traditional musical material. And the material in Sea Tropes that Marshall has used includes sea shanties and hymns of the Northeast and of the fishermen and that sort of...
Very interesting.
Yeah.
When did the use of nature sounds come into the classical music, new music tradition? Because you certainly didn't have any of that during the 19th century or before.
No, that's for sure. You know, I suppose one can always point in an instance like this to John Cage, that Cage was the one who opened our ears to the possibility of anything being music. You know, he certainly was extremely influential in that regard, that that sounds around us can be incorporated and interpreted as musical idea. And in fact, many of his works use plant materials or recordings of nature. A lot of composers, you know, with the development of taped music or music concrete in the 1940s, 1950s, did all kinds of recordings of that weren't just environmental in nature, but were also works which, you know, cultural, and lots of sounds of the world and human society and mix those into musical works as well. And you know,
I guess it's hard to remember sometimes that music was all live performance before a pretty recent date.
Exactly. And you know, today there's a movement that even extends this notion called acoustic ecology, you know, and it's very much, there's a big movement here in Santa Fe with people like, you know, Stephen Feld and David Dunn and Jim Cummings, you know, who create these works that are environmental in nature.
We're talking to John Kennedy, Artistic Director of Santa Fe New Music. Now let's hear a little bit of work by Ingram Marshall. This is a piece called Rainforest, or no, we're going to go to the other one.
Yeah. Well,
okay.
Ingram's Fog Tropes.
Ingram is Fog Tropes. So let's hear a little bit of this, and this starts slowly.
Yeah, it does. This is an example of the work that we're going to hear and premiere Wednesday. Ingram has used in his music this notion of tropes and or a repeating cadence, a repeating theme or motive. And one of his most signal and well-known works is this piece. We'll hear a little bit of Fog Tropes. We're not going to play for you a recording of Sea Tropes, which we premiere Wednesday, because we haven't recorded it yet.
It's not recorded yet because it hasn't premiered yet,
yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen. But let's hear from a little bit from Ingram Marshall right now. And we're listening now in the background to Ingram Marshall, Fog Tropes. Now, this is using sort of foghorns, seagulls, ocean sounds, and so on.
Exactly, with a live brass sextet. And this is it's a work that's very similar in its, you know,
but they're
materials.
Kind of imitating the foghorns.
Exactly, yeah.
What kind of a headspace do you have to be in to absorb this music?
Just any kind of headspace, I think, open. You know, the elements of music, whether we're talking about pitch, harmony, melody, rhythm, all of these things are very much present in contemporary music and in the pieces on the concert we're doing Wednesday night in ways that are really tactile and relevant to today's world.
It's a little hard to hear the rhythm, for example, in a piece like this.
Well, in a piece like that, that's true. It's more of a spatial sound, and what you hear is a periodicity of sounds. You know, it's more like, shall we say, events in nature that have their own independence and periodicity that might be irregular, but it starts to set up patterns in your subconscious.
Really?
And you know, in the
seagulls chanting sets up patterns in your subconscious.
Well, I think if as a listening experience, sure, the way you start to pattern it in your brain and receive it, and you know, in the piece that will premiere Wednesday night, Sea Tropes, there's this regular pulse of the ocean waves, And of course, as if you've ever sat by the ocean and just, you know, sort of reveled in that sound and just listened to it, you know that it comes regularly but with very slight variations. And that's how, you know, the music is somewhat structured. And even in the other piece we're doing on this program, Rainforest by Henry Brandt, he very explicitly structures the music in ways where...
Let's actually fade this out and let's, okay. under our conversation, hear a little bit of Rainforest while we're talking.
Sure. Okay.
So, but anyway, go ahead. He does what?
Well, what Brandt does as well is, you know, he has this notion of musical time space where the musicians share the same time but might be playing different musical events at different tempi. And so, you know, you'll get the whim section playing something with a certain rhythm and periodicity that is different than what the strings may be doing, for instance. And so, and that...
Is it hard to play that? Is it hard to be in sync with one another?
Well, it requires practice. It requires the musicians abandoning or leaving behind, you know, their notion of always being together and in as they must be, you know, in 99.9% of traditional classical music that they're playing most of the time, to having their own sense of independence and trusting their own inner metronome to guide themselves, because they're not always following a conductor. And so there's a bit of a gift from the composer to the musician there to become a co-creator.
So you're featuring work of Henry Brandt, whom we're listening to in the background now, a piece called Rainforest, which is from 89, Ingram Marshall's brand new piece commissioned by Santa Fe New Music, Sea Tropes. And by the way, Ingram Marshall will be featured tonight on Susan O'Hori's program right here on KSFR. It's called Beyond Borders. It starts at 9 o'clock, so right. People have the opportunity to actually hear an interview with this composer. And Keith Allegretti also doing a string quartet. Now, is that more of a string quartet? There's only two musicians listed.
No, that's four for a string quartet. Where Keith is the winner of, or the first place winner of, the New Mexico Young Composers Competition, which is a competition Santa Fe New Music administers each year, and for composers 18 and under throughout the state of New Mexico. And it's a free competition. We provide workshops and score preparation for kids to make sure that the music they've written is submitted in a professional way. And, you know, it's our way of encouraging young people to compose. Composing can be a very lonely art form, like being a poet.
Right.
Or a novelist, I suppose. And so, and there's not a lot of recognition for young people who are trying to compose. And Keith is a previous winner of this award as well. And since he's a senior in high school, we thought it would be great to feature the first movement of his string quartet as part of our concert when we present these awards to seven kids from throughout New Mexico.
Well, all of this is happening at the opera campus at Steeren Hall this coming Wednesday night at 7 o'clock. And for more information, people can call Santa Fe New Music at 474-6601.
That's right.
And they can also write to info@sfnm.org. John Kennedy, Artistic Director of Santa Fe New Music, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks a lot.
And we're going to take a little break right now and move to a whole new genre, namely flamenco. So stay tuned to KSFR.
Oh,
I'd like now to welcome Juan CD and Rebecca Carmona. They are with Juan CD and Company, a flamenco performance group, and their performance Pasión Flamenca is coming up this Saturday, October 13th at 8:30 at the Lodge of Santa Fe. Welcome.
Hello.
Bienvenidos.
Muchas gracias.
And now you're both from Spanish families, both grew up in Europe studying flamenco. What was the nature? I mean, are your parents flamenco dancers? How did this start for each of you?
Not flamenco dancers, but my father is loving flamenco, and we had always a lot of music, and we go to festivals and see a lot of dancing and playing and singing, and it's normally that you love this.
And so it was in essentially in your blood, and you started doing it very young.
I think so.
What about you, Juan?
Same.
Now, you had an Italian father.
Italian father, yes.
And you both grew up in Germany, of all places.
Me, yeah. I'm born.
You're born and raised in Germany.
Frankfurt, Germany.
Now, being somebody of mixed German and Latin heritage myself, what was it like? I mean, there's such very different cultures, Spain and that of Spain and Germany.
Yes, they're different. It's more in Germany, they are more blonde and blue eyes.
But also just the mode of expression and the mode of using the body. Dancing. I mean, do Germans dance?
Yes, but different.
It's different.
I think the people that living in Germany, they come from other countries, they come together and they want to come to their roots. And that's why they make then more culture from their country.
So tell us about the roots of flamenco. Where does this musical form, where does this dance come from?
It's a little bit of the Indian people that come, the gypsy people, they come to the route to over Spain and bring a little bit of belly dance, a little bit of their music and their singing, and it's mixed with the Spanish folklore, and only in the south of Spain grow the flamenco, because the other one that goes to other roots, they make music too, the other gypsies, but different. And you can see it too in the language. They are similar, but it's different because it's mixed with the Spanish folklore and all.
And so how would you describe, I mean, when I see flamenco dancing and music, and when I hear this music and see it in documentaries and so on, it seems that it's born of a kind of suffering and pain, that's inherent in the form.
All kinds of feelings. We express all kinds of feelings, even happy feelings. Yeah, and everything, like everybody, not even people that does flamenco, but they have maybe the same past, the same feelings, the same stuff happening in life, but we express that in flamenco.
So you've been dancing since you were a small child.
Mm-hmm.
Did you also play the music? Do flamenco people learn to both dance and play, or do you sort of choose one path or another?
For me, it was only dancing, but there are a lot that do more.
But I think we are musicians too, because flamenco dancing is not only with the body. Rhythm. We make sound with the feet, and this is music too. This is percussion.
And with the hands.
Yes, percussion with the hands, with the steps. And I think that we are not only dancers, we are percussionists too.
Now, you've both lived and toured all over the world.
Yes.
Do you find people learning flamenco in...
Everywhere,
yes.
What's that all about?
I was in May, I was in Africa, in Zimbabwe, and there are a lot of people loving flamenco and dancing flamenco too.
Zimbabwean Africans.
Yes, I can't believe, because so far away. But I think this is why flamenco is very expressive, and Juan said it before, that you can express all your sentimental, what's
feelings,
all your feelings, and feelings, people have feelings all over the world and need to express, and maybe they found this way with the flamenco to express themselves.
And so people from Spain go to Zimbabwe, open an academy.
Yeah.
Is that what happens?
Or maybe it's Zimbabwean person.
Yeah.
No. When you're so far outside of the culture, the Spanish culture, the gypsy culture, what does it take to really internalize the feeling of flamenco and be able to express it in Zimbabwe, in Finland, in China, in Japan?
It's very interesting because the people love it. And more people...
They appreciate it a lot.
Yes.
Now, you dance with Maria Benitez.
Yes.
How did you find yourself in the United States doing that?
That was destiny. I cannot describe it. That was like... I'm so lucky because I'm a dancer from Germany and there are so many Spanish dancers, traditional ones, more traditional than me, in Spain. And here I am and I'm the principal male dancer.
Now, when you say there's dancers more traditional than you, what, tell us about that, that you have traditional Spanish dance and then you have what, influences from modern or from other things? Or
could be that some people try.
How is that for you?
I like it traditional and pure. Puro?
Pure.
Pure.
What about you, Rebecca?
I like it traditional too, but I like it a little bit modern. Today there are a lot of mixtures with the music and with the dancing. And I think people have to be themselves. Then you can be a good artist. Because there are a lot of good artists are dancing everywhere, very good, but maybe they will have expression like another their teachers.
Right.
And when you find your way to be yourself, then you are more, it's more interesting. That's why I think he come from Germany, but he have a very own special way to express. And this is very important in flamenco, because there are a lot of people very good dancing and singing, but when you have the different thing, yes, you know, then you come to the people better.
Now, do you go back to Spain? Do you go to the heart of flamenco country to be renewed, to fill the well, so to speak?
To eat fish, to go to the supermarket and see the old grandmas. How they talk.
Eat paella.
What's it like to dance in Spain among people who grew up in this culture, as opposed to dancing for performance on a stage in Frankfurt?
It's they look when we say we lived in Germany. They say, "What? But you're dancing so well. I cannot see that you, and you talk. I cannot hear that you was in Germany." But then I talk a little bit of German and say, "Oh God, we can't believe." And then they don't believe the most people that we lived in Germany, because we have a lot of contact with Spanish people, and we perform with a lot of Spanish people that come from the south. Not only. I can talk of me that the most people I perform only was Spanish people that come from Spain or Spanish people that living in Germany, like Juan, and there was Antonio Andrade, El Macareno,
Rafael Cortez,
and all people that come from Spain. There are a lot of
immigrants.
German too, but I told you before. When the Spanish people come in Germany, they come together and then come to their roots.
Let's hear a little bit more of the music. Marilyn is in the control room, and let's listen to it, and then we'll talk about the nature of the music. for listening to flamenco music with Juan CD and Rebecca Carmona. And this is actually you that we're listening to.
Mm-hmm, I'm dancing there.
The sound of your feet.
Mm-hmm. That was on a tour in Germany. I mean, maybe it was in Dresden.
In Dresden. Flamenco in Dresden. What are the traditional instruments that you use in flamenco? Obviously the guitar. But there's other things that we hear. We heard some flute.
The percussion.
Right.
It's a box.
Cajon.
Yeah, cajon, they call it, and comes from Peru, no?
Yes, yeah. It's more modern now. It's using more now. But before, the traditional is only the guitar, the clapping hands, and singing, and dance. And
now
today they mixed a lot of instruments.
And the flute, as you can hear it, that number.
Right, right. There's also a kind of a genre of flamenco. It's not even flamenco, it's like Nuevo Flamenco, which uses some of the rhythms and patterns of flamenco music, but it's become very, very soft and doesn't have the same kind of passion. Where do you consider that in the flamenco world?
Flamenco grows because the common, I told you, because the gypsy come and give them music and then with the folklore. And I think it's good that this growing is going on, because they never get boring. But some people love very, very traditional and pure and go to the roots, only guitar. It's a different way, and I love it both. There are some people, they are more puristic, and there are some people, they are more modern. But I think it's a good way to make innovations.
Now, when you're dancing, I mean, just listening to this music, there's so much passion in it, there's so much energy in it. How do you keep up that passion? Where do you go to find that passion when you're performing night after night after night?
This is the spirit and the soul.
Yeah, thinking about things that you lived before, when I think of pain or you think maybe of grandmother is dead and you had a lot of pain, and you think sometimes before you go to the stage about this, and you can feel more, or you something happy, you have to dance,
you get emotional.
Yes.
Now, is this would you call flamenco a romantic dance?
Can be too,
yes.
It depends what kind of number, how can I explain in
yes,
English?
Flamenco is only one word. In flamenco is alegría, this is a happiness. And a soledad, it's sadness. There are songs for death, when somebody's death. And there are songs for somebody's becoming love. Can be all kind of feelings.
Now you will be performing, how many people are in your company?
We are nine
people, and you will be performing, and does that include the musicians?
Yes. Three singers, and one percussion, one guitar,
and the rest dancers.
Six dancers.
And you'll be performing on Saturday night, this coming Saturday, at 8:30 at the Lodge at Santa Fe, and the number for tickets is 1638, 473-1638, and it's Juan CD and Company in Pasión Flamenca. Juan CD and Rebecca Carmona, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Dankeschön.
Vielen
Dank. Muchas gracias.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. KSFR streams live on the web at ksfr.org. You can email me at radiocafe@ksfr.org or leave a message at 428-1528. We're also podcasting. Website address is santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show anytime you want to, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. You can also subscribe to the show on iTunes, where it will be delivered into your box every day. Thanks to Marilyn LeBlanc for her wonderful engineering today. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, and after that, The Colors of Jazz. Broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company, my name is Mary Charlotte. Keep your dial tuned to KSFR, Santa Fe's only public radio station, and we will see you tomorrow. Ciao.